Cheers.
Welcome back.
Baja Blast going in.
Mm. Hey.
Listen, I'm so excited to be recording the podcast. I'm so excited to finally be reading.
She checks the title.
A Night of the
She looks down and checks the title. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Shaky grounds today. I missed you. I missed talking to you about books.
It's been really
about
exciting.
George's books specifically. So this is going to be good. And it's the probably like the most friendly book the most friendly of his writings in the world of Ice and Fire for us to come back with.
Mm-hmm.
And that influenced a lot of our decision. But I would say mostly for me, it was a couple weeks ago, sitting in the sun, burning my skin, and mostly because I couldn't put this book down. It was a convenient block for my face. I didn't have a hat, so I used the back of the book as a shade and burned through all three of these once again and reignited my passion for this specific narrative in A Song of Ice and Fire, one that you have never cracked the cover on, but have discovered one of the greater mysteries of already. I discovered about 5 minutes ago when we started the podcast. Hannah shows me her laptop screen. And it's just a whole historical breakdown of Egg.
Listen, I Googled one phrase that I don't know if I should say what I Googled. It's so silly. I know nothing. I Googled, is Egg a Targaryen? Okay, listen.
Let me take one of these notes off. Talk to Hannah. Ask her what she knows about Dunkin' Egg so far.
I'll tell you what I know about Dunkin' Egg so far.
Let's hear it.
I Googled that based off an inkling because they talked about his eyes being purple. That was
bluish, yeah.
Or bluish, mm-hmm. That almost looked purple. I take full responsibility for spoiling myself on that front. Before that, that was the only thing I knew about Dunk. Like, I didn't know anything. So when you were reading,
mm-hmm.
I looked over and I saw one of the pictures mm-hmm. and there was a little kid. And I was like...
Yeah, you were like, who's that kid?
Yeah, I was like, who's that kid?
Why is he bald?
I had no idea that Egg was a kid. I didn't know anything about...
It could have been anyone.
It could have been anyone.
Like blood and cheese. Mm-hmm. They're not as friendly or fun as they sound.
No.
Well, I guess blood doesn't sound. But when you put cheese beside blood kind of sounds
fun. It makes it a little
fun.
More comical. Yeah, yeah for
so,
sure.
So what did you picture whenever people, as a host of a book club about
right.
George's books... And having heard this
having never read
from
it.
All of our friends and having never read it, what was in your head? What was the whenever like you get a mental image when you think of something, what was the mental image of what came up whenever people would talk about Dunkin' Egg and you would kind of pretend like you knew what they were talking about?
So what a diss, so true. I pictured it to be way stuffier than it actually is. I don't know what my problem was. Oh, there was no problem. It's like, I never read it. I started on the podcast and then I knew eventually we would probably read it. And so I just didn't read it because how fun is it that we get to do it together?
Mm-hmm.
I get to unravel the mystery in real time like you got to do with
real time, even faster than it takes to read.
Yeah, right. Because I can Google things. Is Egg a Targaryen?
I saw that and I was crestfallen. The
I'm
definition
really sorry.
Of the word. No, it's fine. It's your personal journey. I was just my questions that I had ready for the top of this podcast, I had to throw them all in the trash.
I know, but listen, it is silly
it's obvious,
that
right?
I Yeah, it's obvious. Yeah. That's why I Googled it. Cause I was like,
right.
he's obviously a Targaryen.
Right.
It is so silly that I know nothing about this book at all. So that's all I knew. Is nothing.
So what was in your head? I forget. Did you
that they were?
That?
It was like some stuffy thing. I thought it was like two old guys running around together.
Okay.
And so
okay.
that's all I know.
So if they're old guys, the story sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. That's probably true.
I don't know anything about it. And so you were having such a good time rereading it mm-hmm. recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been intrigued. And we want to come back to, obviously we want to get back into A Song of Ice and Fire. Want to get back into some summer reading vibes. And so it seemed like the perfect thing for
yes.
us to dive into.
Yes.
And it was something I actually really wanted to read. And so we read what, like 36 pages for
depending
this
on the version you read.
Today?
We have reading from the re-release, The Night of the Seven Kingdoms, because you already had the book and it's convenient. I'm doing the same thing, but a digital version.
Mm-hmm.
I read from the physical one and the digital one recently. This is the best beach book I've ever read. I've read on different kinds of beaches, cold beaches,
mm-hmm.
Urban beaches. Separated by a fence. I've read on lakeside beaches. I've read on oceanside beaches, bayside beaches. This one is the best book that I've read next to a beach, for sure, 100%. And the amount of emotion that I've felt while reading this and trying to talk to people about it is overwhelming at times. I don't know why. I really don't know why. There's just so much archetypal truth in this because it's such a simple story. Characters like Steely Pate, Dunk himself, Egg himself, they all just speak to me so much. I don't know why. I feel like George really figured this out. And I'm excited for you to finish The Hedge Knight and read the other two books because they just get better. And it just creeps more toward offering further context on Asawoff at large. And I feel like, especially with this becoming a TV adaptation, that's part of the news we haven't talked about in our vacation from the podcast, is Duncan Egg is potentially being picked up as a live action series on HBO or Max or whatever we're calling it now, maybe something else next year. After rereading it and refreshing myself, Waterside, maybe it's the sun rays, maybe it's being a little burnt. I feel like this is going to be, could be a really powerful television show because of its simplicity. And to those of you who've read it, I think you know what I'm saying when I'm saying that even though the time periods in the next two stories are separated from this first one, I think that there's clear seasons that are already drawn out if they wanted to make a plan the way he's already published it. But there's also opportunity to add so much more. And depending on where and when it comes out in the timetable of George releasing his books, HBO releasing further successor series, I think that there's an awesome opportunity for this to give even further context toward the next thing that would be coming out. Like, they'll all weave together in a really pretty way. Like, we're getting Hot D. Meanwhile, we're all waiting for The Winds of Winter, but we're probably going to find out about Jon, potentially another Targaryen that we don't know about. Obviously, Dany and Meereen.
I should Google if Jon's a Targaryen. No, just kidding.
So I think that it's exciting because before it was mysterious. What is going to be the future of A Song of Ice and Fire? And then we got Hot D, we got Fire and Blood. And it became clear that we were going to sort of be humbly focusing on stuff that, air quotes, already exists. But the reason it already exists, because I believe it is a long-term plan that is unfolding. And it is straightforward. It doesn't have to be a mysterious grand scale that we don't quite know yet. It can be this stuff, and we can dig into it further, and we can find further context on the world of Ice and Fire through it and potentially guess within our own minds what might be next. And I want to talk about the end of this third story. Obviously, we're going to have to get through it on the podcast to eventually get there, but to those of you listening at home that have read Duncan Egg, all three of the books, read the whole Night of the Seven Kingdoms, the way that the last story ends, I think that there's just so much opportunity. And it would be such great timing between Winds of Winter and now, and probably even better timing to see it displayed on television between Winds and Dream Spring. So I'm in. And I'm glad to be doing this during the summer. I'm glad we picked this to come back with because it's really fun. We were thinking about cracking a World of Ice and Fire for a while. And
what
we
a
did
different
crack
vibe.
It would have been a different vibe. So we'll get to it. But we also have other stuff that we're going to get to that we've been planning and working on before we started this. And we decided to come back with a softer landing and have a little bit of fun before we get into the serious stuff as we prep for the coldness of winter.
I feel like it's a little more, at least from reading the first 36 pages in the edition that I'm reading, it is such an accessible entryway back into the world of Westeros. And there's a couple things that really struck me. First, how hilarious this book is.
Yeah.
This book is so funny. And I can totally see how this would make an incredible adaptation for TV. Because, you know, we loved The Hound and Arya, and that was half as funny as the relationship that Duncan and Egg are starting to form between the two of them. And I cannot wait to see how that progresses. Just the way, from the moment that they're introduced to each other, the way that they speak to each other. He says, Dunk comes into where Egg is, and
he like pulls up to the side of the stable, Egg comes out of the water naked, and there is a drawing of it, by the way.
Yeah, there is. Okay. So he's like bald and naked, and he's like, can you help me? And the kid's basically like, if I wanted to.
So, yeah. I guess the idea is like, you know, I could be a stable boy right now. And now when that you have the context, it's like, okay, that's a funny decision on his behalf.
It's amazing. And so, thinking about it in the context of this eventually being adapted for TV, how fun is that going to be? I obviously have no idea what's going to happen at the end. And
yeah, so I love naked kids on TV. That's why I watch Euphoria. I've never seen Euphoria. But I hear it's good because of that.
Oh, yeah.
I hear it's good because of all the naked high schoolers.
I haven't watched it either, so I couldn't weigh in on that. But obviously, without understanding how this may fit into the grander context of everything, I think that it is a really neat experience that we have to be in the world of Westeros and be in the world of these characters that we love so much through so many different points of view. And this point of view so far is of
locked in
a seemingly like lowly hedge knight who wants to be someone and who wants to make a name for himself, which is such a pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of thing. And we see that a little bit in A Song of Ice and Fire as a whole, but it's really fun to get like a true and genuine started from the bottom tale that we get to see the single narrative of.
It starts out, he's digging a grave for his mentor.
Yeah, which is really
dark.
Sad.
Yeah.
It's dark and you're like, who's this grave for? Who is this guy? What's happening? And then as the chapter progresses, we understand where Dunk came from and kind of the interaction that he has when he's trying to sign up for the tourney and they're like, who are you? And he's like, no one.
I mean, think about the moment where Dunk is challenging or where Egg is challenging him on his name. He's like, Dunk, what is that short for? And this first time I missed that in the first couple of reads. I don't know how, but today I realized, I was like, wait a second. He has never thought about what Dunk is.
Right.
He's like, yeah, I guess it is short for Duncan.
Right. Duncan the what?
Oh my God.
I don't have a family. I can't take the name of my mentor because he doesn't.
I don't know
where
it's from. Penny Tree is.
So I'm tall. I'm Duncan, Sir Duncan the Tall.
And nearly 7 feet tall, strapping young lad. 16 or 17. I'm getting 23 vibes off him for some reason. Uh-huh. But yeah, 16 or 17. That's pretty much like 23.
It's his,
in their age.
It's the way he's out there hunting for the girlies.
100 years prior to the current AGOT.
Right.
I mean, Joffrey, Rob, John, obviously they're aged up in the show, but even I'm doing a Song of Ice and Fire reread right now. Even going through that, they just, I don't know if it's because they're lordlings, but
it's they're not
they
interested.
Have a vibe of 18 to 25.
They're not interested in the girlies yet, like this guy is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he seems older because he's on the prowl.
Do you consider Dunk being interested in the girlies?
Yes.
I mean, he is literally interested in a girly in this.
Right. And all I can think about is how much he wants to kiss her.
Go on.
It is so human. And I'm so excited to get to know this guy because he doesn't really know who he is. And he so truly believes in himself that he's willing to bet everything he has on
Wild.
What's coming up. We've got Targaryen princelings, which is kind of fun to see Targaryens as the bad guys again.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And it's like the Targaryen girlie, we don't like her. She's not as hot as the little puppet girl, is what he thinks.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so funny. And then
I wonder if she was actually not as hot as the puppet girl, or if he was just knew that she was unattainable, so he just blocked that out of his mind. You know, that whole style where you're like, nah,
sure,
that's not that good anyway.
Sure.
I'm curious. I don't know if she was a Targaryen. She might have just been I'd have to reread, but wasn't it someone coming out of Ashford Castle to greet the princelings that was a girl?
Potentially. She had blonde hair. She had like blonde hair and a round face. So either way, she was an important girly.
Right.
And Dunk's like, I already saw a little brown haired cutie over here. Yeah. She can move her
hands.
There you go. It's just good energy. Like that's so natural. Like I love when George gets silly, you know? I think he does such a good job of being hilarious. He's such a funny writer.
It's hard to do that in the context of a lot of the POVs in Aswath because so many of these people are serious.
Yes.
And then you get to Vic and it's like, okay, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely. So.
I really like Duncan Egg for its single narrative structure just because it's a little different, but also we get more time synchronously. I think if we reordered chapters from Aswath, we could be like, it feels like that when I'm with Tyrion the whole time, but there's also so much time that goes in between. But this is an experience that we don't usually get. This is when they wake up and Dunk's makeshift, what's it called? Pavilion under the
trees.
This is an iconic location, by the way.
I loved the way he described
that. Think about
that.
Wasn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
It's,
first of all, after he washes his clothes and he's kind of just sprawled out.
Spot.
It's so green and lush. Yeah. And he's just...
Just a western slope.
Yeah.
What Sir Arlen did. He wanted to see the sunset. So he would always every night. It doesn't matter where they were. They would basically have the same home.
Mm-hmm.
Be a western slope and they'd set up all their same stuff. And since they're hedge knights, they don't have a lot of things. But the things that they do have is very specific. There is the sword, Sir Arlen's sword, which is the castle forged steel, like the best thing in his lineup. It's like most of us out here that are makeshift people, but we have a fresh, nice iPhone with the case on it.
Yeah.
Something really useful that's going to be our actual weapon against the world. It's a good sword. And they line up all their possessions, and they have their salt beef that they need to soften, and they lay against a familiar slope no matter where they are. And he does it again after his mentor's death. It's so nice.
It's a great vibe, and I really loved the passage when he was falling asleep for that first night, and he sees a shooting star.
Yeah.
And he says, "A falling star brings luck to him who sees it," Dunk thought, "but the rest of them are all in their pavilions by now, staring up at silk instead of sky, so the luck is mine alone."
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's one of those things, it's kind of like the same juxtaposition as the girl, which girl was actually cuter. Is the romance in all of the simplicity actually that romantic for a hedge knight or people like him? Or is it a coping mechanism?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the way Dunk sees the world, and I think about how he also sort of dreams of all the luxuries that come with being someone else's man. You know, will he sign his life over to a lord's service in order to enjoy the luxuries of life, things like real food? Remember when he goes to the first inn, the inn
that he hadn't been,
he was mistaken Egg as being the woman's son,
mm-hmm.
and there's herb crusted roasted lamb, which sounds so good.
Amazing. It's the first time he'd eaten in an inn in half a year.
Ducks my son shot down. For some reason, I pictured a shotgun like from Fox and the Hound. I had to remind myself it had to have been with a bow and arrow. And brown ale that's thick on the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there? There was something else. Anyway, I have a copy here somewhere, but I have 50 notes. Literally, if you look at these numbers.
Wow.
53.
Oh my gosh.
I know, on this one chapter. I went in too hard. I really like Dunk and Egg a lot.
That's why I can't, who better to read this with than you? So
I can think of a few people. But what was I saying? Anyway, I don't know if it's preference or if it's a coping mechanism, but also the style in which Dunk tends to see the world. And I think Sir Arlen was like that. And because Sir Arlen rescued him from his way of life, mm-hmm. being an orphan and flea bottom so early, so many of his things, like the clout in the ear, the way that he's sleeping at night, the way that he sees the world, down to his lifestyle, he's taken from his mentor, fine. But maybe it is innate in some of us where the luxuries mean a lot less and the experience seems to speak deeper to their soul. And so I wonder if even he had the ability to have a pavilion, would he like it as much as this fringe of society? He goes and he sees the colors that are unable to be seen. All you really see is green, that beautiful green. But if you're in a place like Dorne, that green is just as exotic as these banners are.
Mm-hmm.
But he sees this basically makeshift city where all the stuff goes down for human beings, especially in this time period and this aesthetic where there's no real technology. Basically just like wind travel with sails is the fastest way they can get around. And so people who've put berries and nuts and different things into bowls and smashed them up and dyed fabric and collected them all in this one place makes everything seem bustling and exciting. And that's where the action is. That's where you can buy stuff like armor and you can see hot girls playing with puppets for some reason. And there's opportunity. There's a place, and this doesn't happen pretty much anywhere else. There's a place where you can go. There's a tall drink of water in the form of a lady, and you could offer her a chance to go eat sausage with you later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right there. And you really can't do that outside of a city, especially in these times,
mm-hmm.
and in this place. And so it's cool, but he's still, I don't know, I feel this romance when he goes about half a mile away from the campsite outside of Ashford, and he just relaxes on the fringes and soaks up everything that I think he really think might be beautiful to him. What do you think about that?
I think it reminds me of the first time I drove a car by myself on the freeway, and ooh. I was all alone, and it reminds me of the first time when I moved into my own apartment by myself. He's by himself for the first time, seemingly ever. He doesn't have his mentor with him anymore. He talks about he's holding more money than he's ever been able to hold because he wasn't allowed to hold anything. Not that they really had much before. But I think it's a mixture of that romanticism that you get from
being young.
Being young and being into the way of life that he's into. But also, this is his opportunity to make his mentor proud. This is his opportunity to be his own man. And I think that especially having Egg join him as a squire, it kind of makes him a little more important. This is a little bit more legitimate because now he's got somebody who he now has to care for. So he's the man of the house kind of situation. And so I see it as a combination of all of that. Plus, he's on his own for the first time. So he's able to forge whatever life that he wants to. And he is kind of debating those options. And he decides to come to this tournament because there's a point at the beginning of the chapter when he talks about what hedge knights do. It's like they ride from battle to battle. They serve different lords here and there and then move on. And every once in a while, a tournament comes around. And so this is that once in a while. Yeah, once in a while opportunity to make a name for himself. He wants to win. He wants to be a champion and he wants to be somebody. And whether that leads him to serve some great lord or that leads him to be able to do his own thing, I think is yet to be told for me. Mm-hmm. But that optimism and that excitement of a fresh new beginning with that young swagger and confidence that he so deeply holds.
See, I read that as, I agree with you, but it's so obviously because he's silly.
Oh, for sure. You know what I'm that's why it's like a young, almost innocent kind of, I don't need your coin.
You
because,
owe me 750 stags tomorrow. He's like, bet.
Yeah, no problem.
Meanwhile, I have three on me.
No problem.
I've completely done stuff like that in my life. I totally relate.
Yes, completely.
It's so funny.
Am I going to have to potentially beat a prince? Sure, but I just need to win one battle.
Yeah.
I will be champion. A little extra.
I have no other option.
I'll have the ability to give away some of that stuff if
also,
I need to.
Also, if you lose, you relinquish everything. The horse, your arms, your armament. Holy crap, what a gamble.
They're making fun of him when he goes to sign up because he's like,
you're going to lose.
Yeah, but he's like, you don't have literally anything.
Yeah, what's a hedge knight without even his camp role of his specific equipment? You lose that, then that's when, in the desperation, Dunk talks about this a lot, where the hedge knights turn into robbers, or in the leaner months, like in the cold, hedge knights turn into robbers. What a great little mechanism that George spun to be able to explain human nature in such a relatable way within the context of Westeros, to show us these people. And it's like, ah, yes, that is true. They could have good intentions, but if things get lean and the lords are also too busy supplying their own house knights, a hedge knight coming through, unless you're magical, unless you've won a tourney like this, how much are you really valuable in a time of need?
So when there's sell swords.
Yeah.
You know, and so which comes with a little less heraldry.
Yeah, isn't that funny
heraldry?
That sell swords seem to be more of a an Essosian thing.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, especially in this period, that hedge knights are more acceptable for a dignified house to bring around because, one, they've been seemingly knighted, and two, that's like, it seems like that's all available. It seems like sellswords would be more like associated with the North or something for some reason in my mind, or maybe I'm thinking of the way that the free folk work. But yeah, that's not, knighthood's not really heraldry in that same way, and chivalry is not really an Essosian virtue,
right?
Which is funny.
But he talks so much about making sure that he looks the part. Like, he wants to be in order. He wants to be tidy. He's talking about how
cleanliness is next to godliness.
Yeah, how they always had to bathe even if they didn't smell bad.
He said it was like once a month, though. Something about a moon's turn, which, LOL.
That could never be me. So I like his approach. I like the way he thinks about things. I agree with you. I think that his seemingly romantic view of the world, it makes him so deeply personable. And then to have that, his seriousness that he's taking everything juxtaposed with Egg running around with his egg looking head. And Dunk's like, what's your name? And he was like, Egg. And Dunk pauses for a second and he's like, yeah, you look like it. I mean, he doesn't say it, but he's just like in his mind. He's like, men can be cruel.
Clever boy. If he put that together, once the maester shaved his head or whoever shaved his head, I forget. They talk about it later. I'm not going to say why. even though it's pretty obvious, but I won't say why. Whenever they shaved his head, I wonder if that's when that clicked in his brain. Like, I could just call myself Egg.
Yeah.
But it does sound like his actual name.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all just sort of perfectly clicks together. It's like, damn it. Why'd you have to make it so clean?
The vibes are good. The vibes
are
great.
The universe meant for this to happen.
Right. Or somebody wrote it really well.
Yeah, but like, how did he even write it like that?
Yeah, yeah.
With just a clean guess? Yeah. Come on. So it's good. And that's the podcast.
And that's the podcast. Oh.
How about these illustrations by Gary Gianni?
That picture of the first time we see Egg, the illustration of him. Maybe I'll put that, I don't know, can I put that on Instagram?
Yeah, put that little boy butt on Instagram.
Yeah, it's
going to
get
stories,
flagged.
It'll go away.
I already got flagged on Instagram during House of the Dragon for asking for feet pics. So I might be two strikes and I'm out. But it's kind of fun having photos to match the story, because I feel like Egg's personality comes to life 50 times more when you see him on Thunder, the horse, with the helm over his head, and he kind of looks, you can see the picture here.
Yeah.
The helmet's a little bit too big for his head, and he's got his little sackcloth on, and I feel like it just adds to the experience. It's a different experience that we
have. I like the illustrated Song of Ice and Fire books, too. Yeah, look at Dunk lurching. This is on what page is that?
This is on page 12 and 13.
On page 12, he looks giant. He looks way older than 16, 17, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. It's all working out for him.
He tries to put on Sir Arlen's sword belt. He has to tie it with rope. Yeah. Think about how ragtag this dude looks. I like it too. No, listen, I love Dunk. I just think it's hilarious. And his point of view, he was like, if it works, it works. He's like, your sword belt doesn't
fit. Yeah. He's a very likable, kind of no nonsense thus far energy. And then we get the Targaryen princeling.
Oh, geez, that's who it is.
What was his name again?
Valar?
No. Oh, yeah, maybe. I thought it started with a
D.
No, it was the. It doesn't really matter. He's somebody's son. He's Prince Balon's son.
Or Baelor?
Baelor.
Yeah, Prince Baelor's son. I thought Valar was the.
Yeah, it is Valar. My bad. With two R's. Anyway, this is what he looks like.
Two R's. It's not Valar. It's
he
Valar.
He looks so mean. You know?
I saw that illustration. I just thought it was some foppish gentleman. He doesn't look mean to me. He looks like annoyed.
Do you
want to
hang
impatient.
Out with this guy?
Oh, no. But I think he needs some
second.
Good razzing. You
yeah,
know
he
I mean?
Does. He does. But he's here to join the tournament.
What page is that one on?
That is on page 31.
Okay, right.
I loved... So Dunk is trying to get... He's trying to sell his horse, I think, at this point. And he's waiting in the stables.
Mm-hmm. Sweetfoot. Poor
and...
Sweetfoot.
Yeah, he promises he's going to come back for
Old
her if he wins.
Sweetfoot, Thunder. I mean, he's got a crew with him when the story starts. We literally get put on the right track immediately.
I know.
Go on.
I really hope he comes back for
Can
her.
You believe he had to sell his horse?
I know. That's about as sad as it gets.
And he gives the two coppers back.
And he's like,
just
can
an
you?
Apple for a
Yeah.
And I just, you know, continuing the legacy of his mentor in that regard is really nice.
I can't wait to find out. If he gets it back.
We're like, he's nice to animals. I love this
guy. Yeah, he's sweet to
How
animals.
How many books do you got?
The Prince Valar immediately thinks, oh, here it is.
He does what Dunk does to Egg earlier in the chapter.
Yeah.
He just assumes he's a stable boy.
Yes, he does. The banners. As Dunk turned his head. I'm going to read a couple. I'm
Go
just
going
to read some of this because it's so great. The banners. As Dunk turned his head, a gust of wind lifted the black silk pennant atop the tall staff, and the fierce three-headed dragon of House Targaryen seemed to spread its wings, breathing scarlet fire. The banner bearer was a tall knight in white scale armor, chased with gold, a pure white cloak streaming from his shoulders. That compared to what Dunk did to get dressed.
Yeah.
Two of the other riders were armored in white from head to heel as well. Kingsguard knights with the royal banner. Small wonder Lord Ashford and his sons came hurrying to the doors of the keep, and the fair maid too, a short girl with yellow hair and a round pink face. So it was Lord
Ashford's
kid.
Yeah.
She does not seem so fair to me, Dunk thought. The puppet girl was prettier.
Well, she was grown up. That was probably part of
it. Yeah, that's true.
She's like a 20-year-old puppeteer. He's like, she's going to show me the world.
Yeah, just teach me her ways. God. She's so worldly. Thinks she's a stable boy. The princeling goes, knighthood has fallen on sad days.
Oh, gosh.
We're like, this
Can you
is
just,
some
just
Malfoy
read that.
Energy.
Keep going. I have so many quotes too, but we're just, you know, I'm caught up in the convo.
Boy, let go of that nag and see to my horse.
This is the first thing he says when he gets there.
Immediately. A rider had dismounted in front of the stables. He's talking to me, don't
realize.
He just
told his horse he's a good girl.
I'm not a stable boy, my lord. Not clever enough, the speaker wore a black cloak bordered in scarlet satin, but underneath was raiment bright as flame, all reds and yellows and golds, slim and straight as a dirk, though only half of middling height. He was near Dunk's own age. Curls of silver gold hair framed a face sculpted and imperious, high brow and sharp cheekbones, straight nose, pale smooth skin without blemish. His eyes were a deep violet color. If you cannot manage a horse, fetch me some wine and a pretty wench. I, my lords, pardons, I'm no serving man either. I have the honor of being a knight. Knighthood has fallen on sad days, said the princeling. But then one of the stable boys came rushing up.
Immediately ignored
him. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He realizes who that is. Then he's able to sell his horse.
He has to go somewhere else.
They're like, we don't want this. And you're like, this is my horse, you know?
No need for your poor horse.
After spending so much time with House of the Dragon of Fire and Blood, I was like, it's fun to be on the other side of the Targaryens for a little while.
I agree, for sure.
Just to see another point of
view. Yeah, because I'm too busy empathizing with
them. Yeah, exactly.
Nah, you're not that nice. Show us a POV from a hedge knight.
We need to get back to the real side. Anyway.
I remember years ago when we did this on the podcast, and I read it for the first time, thinking that this story really uniquely captures the time period. It's both the same and different from all the published works. I think Fire and Blood does a really great job, and so does The World of Ice and Fire, of showing a time period that doesn't really exist anymore post-Robert, and probably was fading away leading up to Aerys II, for sure. But Duncan Egg, the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, I think, especially the Hedge Knight, and especially as we get further into it, but some of what you just read reminded me of it. This time period being 100 years previous of the starting point of the main book series, they're still holding on to that enameled armor vibe.
Mm-hmm.
They're really going deep in a lot of the accessories, the decorativeness. It's not quite as bleak and simple as when you think of what the vibe is of going through the Riverlands, going to the end of the crossroads, and not everyone's doing okay. It's still really holding on to this. And this tourney at Ashford still has a lot of that energy. And I think Hot D really tries to capture that, especially in the opening sequence of going through after the dragon training with Rhaenyra and going through the city. But especially when you read Fire and Blood, you get a lot of that, the sort of gilded, edged nature of the armor, and take that as an analogy for the rest of the way the world's described.
Mm-hmm.
This story does a really good job of bringing you into that time period and making it feel like an ancient time.
Mm-hmm.
But what's cool, or not ancient, but like an older traditional era. But what's cool is that instead of hopping from POV to POV, through Dunk's very straightforward perspective, it feels almost like the most modern.
Yes.
Almost as modern as like a Tyrion chapter.
That's what I was going to say.
Because he's so just in the front of mind, and Egg's quips with him are just sort of break the fourth wall of any kind of propriety. So that blended together with this kind of heraldry and this kind of, multiple Targaryen princelings will just make you feel like your time traveled overall, because we're used to just having Viserys and Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it really feel special to me.
Especially the way that they talk about, I think the biggest tell is how they talk about the Targaryens, how they're different, they're separate,
they're still drinking the Kool-Aid, basically. Yeah, speaking of, I'm really sorry about all the ice noise.
I know.
We have two Baja Blasts going, and I very sillily have ice in an aluminum cup.
So do I. I've been like taking huge gulps,
and I got mouth noises too.
The combo's
we're good back used to
this. Anyway, the biggest tell to me is the how they talk about the Targaryens and how they're from this ancient bloodline that was here before Westeros was even formed, and they're different than us. They're not the same. And Westeros in our current day is deeply in chaos because there is no order.
Better people.
Yeah, there's no...
You can't really look up to any celebrity class almost.
The position of the royal position has been completely made a farce, basically, in Westeros, you know?
It's kind of how it is in our current day.
Yeah.
My God, G.R.R.M. What the fuck?
But so that has...
So this is like George Washington area.
Right.
Flutes and stuff as they go into war. Okay.
They got gold along their jackets. But like you said, at the same time, this is like a very modern and very familiar this could be a chapter that is somewhere in book four, you know, pretty easily, I feel like. And so
yeah,
I really like those two things together.
If they were still doing attorney.
Yeah, yeah. But
definitely the inactivity and potentially meeting like a kid.
Setting up camp and kind of seeing what normies are up to and wandering around. I just feel like that this could very easily be taking place somewhere, if not for this godly view of this one family that just happens to be, in the minds of most people,
God, that
the best of the best.
Reminds me, what a relief that things aren't as chaotic as they are in A Song of Ice and Fire. The War of the Five Kings hasn't broken out. Winter's not imminent. And so there's not those religious zealots kind of running stuff. Mm-hmm. Like there's puppet shows and it seems that money is what's talking and bullshit's what's walking, which is really refreshing to be so far away from a city and it's still to feel slightly metropolitan, like there's some kind of order to things.
It's interesting. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how Dunk's point of view shows me Westeros in this 100 years before.
That's why it's so good.
Era.
With Egg too, yeah.
Yeah, I think.
But he could die in the next chapter or the next part of this. You never know.
For sure.
Did you find that out when you Googled?
No.
You're like, he lives through all three books.
Listen, I Googled one thing. It reminded me of something I should have already known because it's in the show, the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Very briefly, I didn't know what it meant.
Do they say in the show that he calls him Egg?
Either they say, yeah, because he has that dream.
Yes.
Anyway,
Egg.
Listen,
I dreamed that I was old.
I'm sorry, I did not put those two and two together until I literally Googled it's Aegon Targaryen.
That's so funny.
I'm trying to come at this with the most rando POV because I just think that that's kind of fun for me. And so,
other than Googling, is Egg a Targaryen?
Listen, I had to do one thing so I didn't sound like a total and complete idiot.
I get it. I mean, it was obvious.
They say he's purple eyes, and then
6 pages later, it describes Valar
exactly,
having purple ass eyes. Yeah.
Plus, it was in the TV show.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't want to be sitting here like, is Egg a Targaryen?
Sure. Sure. I was going to have fun with that.
I know you were.
I don't know, Lazy. <Yeah. is>
That's literally, I swear to you, pinky promise, that's all I know, though. So,
where do you think it's going to go?
Man.
I want to talk about some more details, but while we're on the subject, based on where we are in the tourney, what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, I haven't even read the synopsis.
You think he's going to be able to fight? You think it's going to be drama outside the tourney of him not being able to join? Have you ever seen A Knight's Tale?
No.
That's required reading for this. We'll have to watch A Knight's Tale.
Okay.
I'll give you a Netflix login.
Okay. I hope that he is able to enter the tournament. He has some prospects to hopefully vouch for his knighthood that will allow him to participate. I would love for him to enter the tournament and make some waves. I don't think he's going to win the whole thing.
He's so hot. Look how tall he is. He's almost 7 feet.
Right. His long hair.
And he's thick with two C's as a castle wall.
His neck
wall.
Is too big for them to use normal helms or whatever. He was like, whatever. Leave me alone.
This is the details that you remember.
Leave me alone. I want him to make some waves in the tournament. And then I want that to then lead him and Egg on some sort of adventure where he is becoming bit by bit, maybe not on purpose, maybe kind of on accident, a little bit of a legend.
Okay.
That's what I would like to see.
So what do you think about Steely Pate? The armorer.
Oh, that guy who, he was like, I only sell my own work.
Yeah. Here's Steely Pate's introduction. Dunk's looking around at gear. He sees there's like Tairashi, silks, different offerings. This is after he clocks. Tansel, we'll learn her name. That's her name.
Okay.
Spoiler, he talks to her again. Whoa. Ooh. And so he's like, okay. He sees some armor that looks like it is not in his price range. We all know that. Y'all been standing outside the Chanel, the Balenciaga store.
Right, the Apple store.
Yeah, the Apple store, the Dyson store for me. I'm like, how good is that stick vacuum? That's what he was doing. He's like, but I don't need it.
Uh-huh.
This $40 Walmart vacuum is just good enough. So he's looking at this, like, again, the enameled, like the crested, the different kind of wrought designs. We don't really see that in current Westeros. It's just sort of
the
a
plumes.
Relic of a different time. I think we have plumes
we have
in modern
some.
Westeros.
Yeah, right.
I'm imagining Jaime with a bit of plumage. He's like, no, that's not it. That's not the one for me. And then he finds, because this man has good taste, all right? He's been a hedge knight. He's not been treated to the luxuries of being in a lord's care. They can only carry so much. They have to survive and they have to be useful. They have to roll out their little kit, click their gear together, and make it work in the right way. So he's looking for someone that's offering that, right? See, a knight's tale. Anyway, he sees Pate's work just spread out on the table. He looks at it. He's like, this is actually good work. Let's read it. You do good work, he said. None better, a stumpy man. The smith was no more than 5 feet tall. What an intro. Yet wide as dunk about the chest and arms. So in George's mind, I guess, it's like, yeah, you can be really short, but, you know, he was substantial. Mm-hmm. He made a valuable human being. He did something to be a permanent resident of this world. He had a black beard, huge hands, and no trace of humility. And anyway, he measures him. I have some pieces in my wagon that might do for you, the man said when he was done. Nothing prettied up with gold or silver, mind you. Just good steel, strong and plain. I make helms that look like helms, not winged pigs and queer foreign fruits. But mine will serve you better if you take a lance in the face. Dunk doesn't have the money, mm-hmm. So he figures out a deal with him. 2 silvers now, and I'll give you the rest of the money tomorrow. And we know
he understands how much 2 silvers is right now to Dunk.
Right, no kidding. No kidding. So he's got to sell the horse, or he's got to win. Something's going to happen because no one's going to give him a free ride, even though he's hanging out with you-know-who mm-hmm. who has access to the place where they make the gold. 2 silvers buys you a day. After that, I sell me work to the next man. Anyway, Steely Pate, why do I bring him up? I don't know. There's a moment with him later in the story that's so nice, and I don't know. I just think George nailed it with this dude. There's something about this armor that I think is really crucial to explaining Westeros and really interesting that someone like this, we'll find out probably in the next episode that we do, maybe the third one, depending on how we break this story up. So I'll just stop that point there. Steely Pate's cool. We'll talk more about
somebody
him later.
To remember.
Yeah, he's just there's a lot of people like that will, especially like right after the place that we stopped. We stopped right when he basically shoots a shot with Tansel.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we stopped mm-hmm. for this podcast. So right after that, there's more interactions with characters that speak deeper to the current time and help us see Dunk from a different perspective. But I think what Pate really does is he sort of serves as an antithesis to our love for him. Because
mm-hmm.
he's indifferent about how good of a person Dunk appears to be. He also doesn't know him. So getting the approval or not of someone like this makes a big difference, I think, in how well we think the story's going.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that, Dunk goes back to his camp. And I don't have the passage quoted, but when he's walking back to his camp and he sees a fire in the distance, it's just perfectly cool and creepy. It's like pretty, beautiful and creepy at the same time. The way that the flickering firelight is at his camp. It's kind of scary because part of not having your own pavilion is opening yourself up to the danger of the elements and potential other desperate folks. It's like a personification of not being under a lord's care. It's mm-hmm. like, what could happen to you?
Right.
And at least at this point in the story, things are kind of sunshine and rainbows. Hannah's looking at a picture of Steely Pate.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he gets there, it's sunshine and rainbows. It's just a little Dunk or right. a little egg. I always get them mixed up. Not because I actually do, because their names are both so silly.
They're so silly.
Yeah.
Can I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're ready.
Yeah.
Dunk was moving through a patch of weed, chewing over his chances in his head, thinking about the tourney, when he saw the flicker of firelight through the bushes. What is this? Dunk did not stop to think. Suddenly his sword was in his hand and he was crashing through the grass. He burst out roaring and cursing, only to jerk to a sudden halt at the sight of a boy beside the campfire. You, he lowered the sword. What are you doing here? Cooking a fish, said the bald boy. Do you want some?
Want some?
I mean, how did you get here? Did you steal a horse? I rode in the back of a cart with a man who was bringing some lambs to the castle from my lord of Ashford's table. They have a conversation back and forth. Dunk tells him to leave. He's like, you need to go. And he was like, well, then you'll need to ride all the way to King's Landing. You'd miss the tourney. King's Landing? For a moment, Dunk wondered if he had been mocked, but the boy had no way of knowing that he had been born at King's Landing as well. Another wretch from Flea Bottom, like as not, and who can blame him for wanting out of that place? This was my favorite part. He felt foolish for standing there with a sword in hand over an 8-year-old orphan. He sheathed it, glowering so whatever, so the boy would see that he would suffer no nonsense. But Egg, I'm doing the same thing as you are.
It's hard, right?
He's like, I'm cooking fish.
You better turn it over. You gotta have one side raw, one side burnt.
He felt foolish. I'm looking at the picture on page 23 of Egg with his little, he's got a little something over his head. But anyway, then they talk about, they make
it's like a little hood. That's when he asked him about his hair, why it's shaved. Yeah. He gets a little self-conscious.
Then I love I could read this whole chapter. Then I love how he decides, he blurts out Sir Duncan the Tall as his name. And then he asked he asked him, what's his name? The boy hesitated. Egg, he said. Dunk did not laugh. His head does look like an egg. Small boys can be cruel, and grown men as well. And then they see the shooting star after that. So the whole thing is just, it just feels a little prophesied almost. I mean, look, if we're in Westeros and there's shooting stars flying over your head, I'm not going to,
it's only going to get more feeling like that, by the way.
There's two things in this chapter that made me feel that way. That was one of them. Shooting stars floating over the head. It's like, okay, I'm going to pay attention to that. The second was when he was in the inn and that drunk guy was like, dreamed about you.
Let's go, mystery.
Yeah. I'm like, I have read too much of A Song of Ice and Fire to just let that pass as some guy yelling in the street, you know?
Yep.
So
I'll read that. I have that saved somewhere. I also have a note called Babe City. Let's just read that really quick. When he caught the smell of sausages sizzling over a smoky fire, his mouth began to water. He bought one with a copper from his pouch and a horn of ale to wash it down. Now, this is a day, first off, right? As he ate, he watched a painted wooden knight battle a painted wooden dragon. The puppeteer who worked the dragon was good to watch, too. A tall drink of water with the olive skin and black hair of Dorn. She was slim as a lance with no breast to speak of, but Dunk liked her face and the way her fingers made the dragon snap and slither at the end of its strings. He would have tossed the girl a copper if he had one to spare, but just now he needed every coin. All right, what was I looking up? I got a little distracted.
Babe City. The drunk man at the inn saying that he dreamed of Dunk.
All right. Hold on, let's read this note. Contentment. This is what it means to be a knight, he told himself, as he sucked the last bit of meat off the bone. Good food and ale whenever I want it, and no one to clout me in the head. Okay. The dreamer. Bear in mind, this guy's passed out in a pool of wine on the table. Apparently, he's paid enough that this nice woman at the inn isn't going to clean him up. I dreamed of you. His hand trembled as he pointed a finger. You stay away from me, do you hear? He woke up really fast. You stay well away. Dunk stared at him uncertainly. My lord? The innkeeper leaned close. Never you mind that one, sir. It's Dobby. All he does is drink and talk about his dreams. I'll see about that food, she bustled off. Food? The lordly made the word an obscenity. Food? He staggered to his feet, one hand on the table to keep himself from falling. I'm going to be sick, he announced. The front of his tunic was crusty red with old wine stains. I wanted a whore, but there's none to be found here. All gone to Ashford Meadow. Gods be good, I need some wine. He lurched unsteadily from the common room and Dunk heard him climbing steps, singing under his breath. A sad creature, thought Dunk, but why did he think he knew me? He pondered that a moment over his ale. So that was it, but it was enough. It was enough of a window.
Kind
of to my original point. Different things happen in this that are going to feed into not only the excitement for more successor stuff, whether it be books or shows, but I think all added up are offering the appropriate context to go into the next one with like the best preparation possible. And so to be not too far into the beginning of the story and to have someone say something that's so third wall breaking is right up my alley. Exactly the kind of spice and ingredient that I want. I didn't see it coming. How did it affect you, this being a total shock for you?
It was just something that, like a radar going off in my head, you know, of he's seemingly a nothing throwaway background guy who is the town drunk or whatever. And he says this thing that's so pointed. And so I just feel like dreams specifically in A Song of Ice and Fire, you can't throw those to the wayside. So if he had said something else, then maybe it would have been less suspicious in my mind. But
you stay away from me is quite forward.
It is. I don't have a lot of thought at this point.
Right, like a theory about what that it could means be, or whatever.
Yeah, or why he would say that. But it just rang up. It just was like red flag, like pay attention to this. So I just highlighted it and I wrote, who was this man? What did he dream?
What did he drink, really?
What did he dream?
I guess we know what he drank. What made him like that?
Yeah. So all of that to roll into the fact that there is a lot of richness and a lot of that mystery on top of this seemingly humble guy who's just kind of trying to figure out how to make his way. It creates a really nice, welcoming, easy read that I'm loving.
So it's
hard
like it.
To stop.
You like it, like it.
Yeah, I really like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Right on. I thought you might. It's this is not an insult at all, but it's got way more of like a YA vibe than the other books.
That's what
have.
I was exactly going to say.
Yeah.
A coming of age kind of.
But it's still grown up.
It's still grown up. But
the elements that are happening in it are actually dangerous.
But it has at least these very first couple pages, like we were talking about. It's very innocent.
Yeah.
And so it feels like coming of age-y. Somebody really important is gone, and now he's off to find the stuff on his own. I love YA, and so that's up my alley.
Dunk is like looking at this girl, but he doesn't even know what to do with her.
Right.
So that's YA. That's pretty much
completely. It's very innocent. It's all very innocent.
Yeah.
And there's not, especially when it comes to women, men and women in A Song by a Spy, there's not a lot of innocence there, you know?
No,
so I think that
adds
into that vibe.
Selling the horse. Henley liked the look of Sweetfoot well enough until he heard Dunk wanted to sell her. Then all the stablemen could see her were her folds. Come on.
Classic.
Come on. All right, well, so after Dunk sees Plumber, the steward, he's told that he needs to get the Dondarrion bloke that he might know to vouch for him, right? So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime...
So he sells Sweetfoot. Is that her name? His
yeah.
name? Sweetfoot? Yeah. With the promise that I'll be back, which I think is so sweet, for lack of a better word. And one thing I thought was really funny was how he's inspecting his money. And he like,
yeah.
It's the first time he's bit gold. And he was like, this kind of rules a little. But then he realizes that it's been shaved off.
Can you imagine if our money was like
that? The same
how
thought.
Inconsistent things would be.
Yeah. So he gets paid for what he's due. And then he's got a pocket full of change. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I loved the description of him walking with what that felt like. And it was both exciting and scary for him.
And the possibilities are almost endless, but not like that Balenciaga armor.
Right.
So it's like, we can get food.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing. I can go get the dollar menu at McDonald's. We can get like 12 nuggets right now.
Man, that's such a good
fresh
vibe.
Fresh Diet Coke.
That's such a good vibe.
It is a great vibe. And that's, I just think, something that's so nice about this part of the story is that the warmth that comes from the simple things
that
are
freedom.
So good. I guess it's freedom. You describe it as that. And I think maybe I'm not smart enough to see it like that. I'm just focused on how good it does feel to get thick ale on your tongue.
Right.
It's like, ooh, and it's nutty brown ale. Ooh, that sounds good. Like, there is so much to draw from that. I love that. That's pretty much where my intellect ends. How cold is the soda? Uh-huh. Oh, what a night we're going to have.
It's good vibes all around. So what does he do? What's the first thing he does with his dollar bills? He goes back to that girly that he had a crush on.
Of course, dude.
Throws her a couple of change for yesterday, too.
All right, I'm going to read it. Dunk stopped to watch the wooden dragon slain. When the puppet knight cut its head off and the red sawdust spilled out onto the grass, pay attention to this, by the way, Hannah. He laughed aloud and threw, you're going to need to. No spoiler. It's just for some reason. I'll read it again. When the puppet knight cut its head off and the red sawdust spilled out onto the grass, he laughed aloud and threw the girl 2 coppers. First off, I mean, I guess that's a normal thing to do. It's kind of wild to just throw money at her.
Right, it is.
One for last night, he called, which, I mean, there's other people there. Okay. She caught the coins in the air and threw him back a smile, as sweet as any he'd ever seen. That is
That's
a good
so
interaction.
Nice.
Like Jasmine. What's the movie she's in?
Aladdin.
Yeah,
is that
from
your
Aladdin?
Disney princess crush?
I'm kind of imagining that.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. One of them. As sweet as any he'd ever seen. This is Dunk's game that he gives back to her. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I know you've read it, but I mean, as a woman, hear me say this and tell me how effective it is. Will you drink a horn of ale? He asked the puppet girl as she was scooping the sawdust blood back into her dragon. With me, I mean. Or a sausage? I had a sausage last night. It was good. They're made with pork, I think. Your turn.
Yeah, she's like, I'm working. I'm still working
I'm scooping sawdust right now. Pork, you said. Wow. Uh-huh. Pork sausage.
You had it last night, too?
Was it good?
I'm hungry, so yeah, that might work.
Yeah, honestly, dude, catch me at the right time during the day. Yeah, yeah. Dunk, you can get me with that.
Yeah, totally. It's what makes him so likable, you know? There's no heraldry about it. He's just... That's what's... It's like you were describing. Just his simplistic, wholesome view of stuff at this point, right now. Like, that's the most exciting thing that's been happening to him, and he wanted to share it. That's nice.
That is nice. I didn't see it that like that. I thank you, my lord. But we have another show. The girl rose and ran off to the fierce, fat Dornish woman who worked the puppet night while Dunk stood there feeling stupid. He liked the way she ran, though. A pretty girl and tall. I would not have to kneel to kiss that one. He knew how to kiss.
Oh my gosh.
A tavern girl had showed him one night in Lannisport a year ago, but she'd been so short she had to sit on the table to reach his lips. The memory made his ears burn. What a great fool he was. I like that. There's two short. This is good wordplay. He knew how to kiss, period. Mm-hmm. A couple sentences later, what a great fool he was, period. It was jousting he should be thinking about, not kissing.
So true, brother. What a fun. It's just fun. Like, what's some fun little interactions?
All fun and games right now. The tourney hasn't started yet.
Well, I know it hasn't. I'm having a good time. I'm probably going to feel silly for having such a good time. And I'm looking forward to seeing, obviously she's unnamed now, but she will be named later. So she's going to play a role. And I'm looking forward to seeing if he can shoot his shot a little bit better. If she ever gives him what he wants.
Okay, so you want to do owns? All right, guys.
I sure do.
Time for owns. For part one of The Hedge Knight, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, A Century Before, A Game of Thrones. Wait, no. Go back. Two unlikely heroes wandered Westeros.
I'm going to give my own to the very first moment that Dunk and Egg meet each other. Because reading this on page 8 and just realizing what kind of story this was going to be and that it was not going to be what I thought it was going to be before I cracked it open... How much fun is that?
Is that what did it for you?
Yeah.
Their exchange. Oh, that's awesome.
It's just the picture, the exchange. I'm going to read a little bit of it. Dunk, as he dismounted, a naked boy emerged dripping from the stream and began to dry himself on a rough-spun brown cloak. Are you the stable boy? Dunk asked him. The lad looked to be no more than 8 or 9, a pasty-faced, skinny thing, his bare feet caked in mud up to the ankle. His hair was the queerest thing about him. He had none. I'll want my palfrey rubbed down and oats for all three. Can you tend to them? The boy looked at him brazenly. I could, if I wanted. That is so good. Look at the pick. I mean, they're just, the whole thing. And so, own to that for just setting such a good tone for these guys' dynamic and such a good tone for who these characters are. Yeah. And for making me so excited to read the rest of this book.
That's so nice because... prior to that, it was a funeral, basically.
Yeah, it was really heavy.
Yeah.
And sad.
And so George is like, okay, what's next? I'm going to go to a place. Okay, what's the next event? A Targaryen boy splashes out of the water naked, and he's giving cheek to you.
And he's got so much mud all the way up. Like, he's been out
in
the water.
He's got mud shoes on.
Yeah.
That's
so
nice.
Good.
That's nice.
So, own to that.
Mine's from a couple paragraphs before that. This is when... Dunk was saying his last words to Sir Arlen as he was burying him. I really like this. I leave your sword, but it would rust in the ground, he said, at last, apologetic. He didn't know what to say. Sir Arlen never really taught him how to talk at a funeral when someone you love has died. The gods will give you a new one, I guess. I wish you didn't die, sir, he paused, uncertain. What else needed to be said? He didn't know any prayers, not all the way through. The old man had never been much for praying. You were a true knight, and you never beat me when I didn't deserve it, he finally managed. Except that one time in Maidenpool. It was the inn boy who ate the little woman's pie, not me. I told you. It doesn't matter now, or it don't matter now. The gods keep you, sir. That was really nice.
Really nice.
That was fun.
now it's time to go into your owns. Thanks to everybody who sent this in. We put the call for owns up maybe 2 hours before we sat down to record. Mm-hmm. And so really appreciate everybody who stepped up. It was so nice. A lot of you sent some really sweet messages. Yeah, people sent some really sweet messages, and I'm just really happy.
Hey, this isn't a random episode that we're doing. I mean, we're getting right back in the swing of things, like right now.
Completely.
Just to let you all know.
Yeah, no, we're back, baby.
Thank you.
So it feels good. So thank you, everybody who did send in your owns really soon. And I'm going to start first on Instagram with @ Mrs. Duncan the Tall, which this is your time to shine. This is your time to shine.
Yes.
Own to Chestnut for carrying Dunk 6'11 behind all the way to Ashford. So true. And own to Sir Arlen for being a total G and raising Dunk as his own.
M. Jared Naginart. Own to Dunk for finding the hottest girls at any event to do stupid shit for love. Okay, I got this better. Own to Dunk for finding the hottest girls at any event to do stupid shit. Love that for him. For him. I got stupid shit for him. Right on.
I reposted that. Love that for him. Ashea said, Tansel too tall, more like Tansel too talented. Love her puppetry work.
I also love Tansel's puppet work. I think that there's an opportunity for us to integrate that in some kind of programming at some kind of place going into the future. If there's any puppeteers listening, please let us know. I'm going to move to Twitter right now. Mostly Twitter was just jokes and shit talking, as Twitter has devolved into. But that's a good thing. That's kind of all we've ever done on our Twitter account. So if anything, we're more home now than ever. From Chase, Ghost Chase Killa. Own to Hannah for finally reading this.
So true, bestie.
There was something happened. I think when the TV show got announced, we tweeted. Now finally, Hannah was like, oh great, now I finally have to read Dunkin' Egg.
Yeah.
So the gods have chosen. It's all coming together really nicely.
I'm really happy that
this was fun.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
Thanks for still doing the podcast with me.
Well, thanks for everybody for listening still. I mean, it's nice to be back. So I hope everybody jumps in and reads along with us. And like you said, we're going to be back. Like, we're back.
So we'll see you next week, I guess.
See you later.